We're back, and my guest in the studio with me today is Suan Hillman. Good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. It's good to be talking to you.
Well, how long have you and I known one another?
Well, we don't want to give that secret away.
No, okay. Long, let's say a long time.
For sure. Yeah. Yes, for sure.
And like a lot of other people of Chinese ancestry, you've got a story. You've carried a story along with you.
Oh, for sure. You know, on all the years, I won't tell you how many years, but it goes way back to before I was born.
Yes.
And, you know, goes right through the family. And, of course, you know, every Chinese immigrant that's in Canada, whether it's themselves or whether with their parents or grandparents, the story is all similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was telling you off the air about having Inky Mark as kind of a swan song interview.
Hey, swan song.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my name.
I know.
Swan.
Swan song interview with him on not that long ago, and he said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a very interesting story to tell, and we're going to get to yours in a bit.
Okay.
You brought a mock-up model of the monument, the proposed monument.
Yes.
And maybe you can talk about the project, how it got started, who are the movers and shakers, and where it's at and where it's going.
Well, it really started with the Canadian government in 2006 when they recognized the injustice of excluding the Chinese immigrants in the early 1800s, right up until 1947. There was a head tax that started in 1885, mm-hmm. trying to restrict the Chinese immigrants in coming to Canada. And started with a head tax of $50 up to $100, and even that didn't stop the people from coming. So in 1923, it was up to $500, or 1903, mm-hmm. up to $500 per head. And then in 1923, there was the exclusion, Chinese Immigration Act, which effectively excluded the families from joining the men that were already here. So to commemorate the Head Tax Act and also the Chinese Immigration Act, you know, this is really a brainchild of my brother, Kenny Choi. And, you know, a lot of people know Kenny. But the whole project is close to our family because in 2006, the Canadian government apologized to the Chinese immigrants,
yes.
and to the families for this exclusion. And in doing so, they also set up a fund. It's a provincial fund. It's a community historical and cultural fund.
All right.
To help, you know, give us a grant to set up any kind of monument to commemorate the events. And also, the Canadian government also set up a fund to reimburse the surviving immigrants who paid the $500 head tax,
yeah.
or to the surviving widows. Well, my mom, who was one of a handful, I think two, in Brandon anyway, that were eligible. My father had passed away in 1983 or sometime then. And so my mother qualified for the payment back. And from $500, now I'm not sure whether my grandfather did. He came to Canada in 1913. My dad came in 1923. So I know my dad paid the $500. Now, whether my grandfather did or not, mm-hmm. I'm not sure. He came to Canada as a merchant. And so my mom got a check for $25,000.
Really?
And so I guess that's relative to what was paid in 1923, 1913.
Well, up till today it would be.
Yes. And so the other gentleman, or the widow of the gentleman, was the owner of the old Ritz Cafe on 10th Street.
Oh, really?
So it's kind of interesting. Both our restaurants were on 10th Street, you know, Sue's and the Ritz,
yeah.
Cafe. And so my mom was a recipient of the $25,000. And so Kenny really felt, and my mom really felt, that we should have something to commemorate, mm-hmm. all the early settlers, you know, the hardships that they faced, and to educate our future generations as to the sacrifices that our ancestors
and
made.
Other Canadians.
Yes, for sure. You know, there were a lot of prejudices against different age cultural groups,
mm-hmm.
but you know, for the government to actually do this, and we need our kids and our grandchildren to understand,
yeah.
you know, what went on in the early history.
I'll admit to you that my knowledge of this story is limited, and probably enhanced most recently, you know, in the past 8 years or so, by a visit to the tunnels in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
Right. Well, you're not alone, because I myself, you know, I am Chinese, as you can see. I know
you are.
You wonder. I know you wonder sometimes when you look at me. And I know people look at my name and say, Hillman, well, that can't be Chinese.
Well,
but, you know, I came to Canada when I was very young, so my knowledge of the Chinese history and the Immigration Act and all this really came about, you know, with the start of this project and, you know, with talking to my mom and to my brother, and all the different pieces start to fit together. There was always sort of a blank page, you know, from the time that I came to Canada.
Yeah.
So everything was, you know, just starting to fall into place.
Well, I think the other thing I was thinking about was similar to veterans telling about the war, and they seem to be reluctant to do that.
Yes.
to younger generations. This will probably start a lot of conversations within families. Do you
think? It has. And even within our own family, you know, our project started in 2007 when we were setting up the Westman Chinese Association. And, you know, Kenny started thinking about this, and we had a lot of roundtable discussions at family gatherings. Mm-hmm. And my nieces, my nephews, my own kids, Bill, you know, who was always interested in the Chinese history, because, mm-hmm. I mean, he is married to one. But not Chinese history, but, you know, Chinese person. But, you know, all the conversations that went through, you know, our meals.
Yeah.
And the kids really appreciate that. And I think they would tell their children, you know, what has gone on before and all the sacrifices that, you know, families have made.
And you're talking about your mom getting recognition monetarily and, you know, historically, and the apology. Mm-hmm. That must have been made a huge impact on her.
It did. You know, I mean, she was, let's see, 99 when she received the check. And for her, there was a lot of memories that came back.
Yeah.
My dad came to Canada when he was 14 in 1923, and he went back to China to get married when he was 16. And through the different periods, you know, he was able to, you know, the men were able to take trips back to China, mm-hmm. to visit the families. The families were not able to join them. So it's always a funny story, because every time Dad went back, there was another child.
There you are.
His last visit was 1947, and I was born in 1940.
Yeah.
Right.
Good enough.
And then he came back in 1949. So from that time until 1958, when my mom and I came to Canada, I didn't know my dad.
That's a long.
I had never seen my dad. And, you know, there was a period of time, too, in that those years, there was also the Communist Revolution in China.
Yeah.
So my mom had not only separated from her husband, but she also had to send her children away to keep them safe. And I was the last one to leave. I was sent away, smuggled into Hong Kong when I was 2 by a neighbor. And so I didn't see my mom for a good 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
And then we were in Hong Kong until 1958. We were reunited. Kenny was already there.
Yeah.
And another sister, my sister was in another part of China. My older brother was in the States. So in 1958 was when, you know, my mom and I came and were united with my dad. And then my brother Kenny came in 1959.
And that's incredible to me, because it's not that long ago.
No. And, you know, for this culmination of having the head tax, the apology, the reimbursement, I guess you can call it, you know, it really brought a lot of memories and a lot of stories back to my mom.
Yeah.
And she was sharp. My mom had a really good memory, and, you know, little bits started to come out, you know, in the family history. And my mom actually was very glad. We were very glad that she was still alive.
Yes,
when she got her reimbursement. And she just died in February in her 101st year. So.
Well, you've told us about the government story,
mm-hmm.
but there were tragic personal stories. These are stories that I picked up when I was in Moose Jaw on the tour, but about families. You know, the employer would make a promise, if you
mm-hmm.
work this long and you save this much, and I'll do this for you. And
right.
that horizon kept getting farther away.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, that's a story that's repeated in so many families.
Yeah.
My grandfather came as a merchant, and he worked for the First Water Commissioner in Winnipeg. You know, so he's trying to save money, you know, sending money back home as well. And a lot of people that came were on contract. So, you know, the employer would pay the head tax, pay the expenses, so they were to work it off. But, of course, as you know, it never seems to get worked off.
It never seemed to get paid off.
And a lot of men came, you know, left the families and never saw them again.
Yeah.
When we were at the Qingming, our annual Chinese cemetery visitation day last year, we looked at some of the cemeteries, the headstones, I should say. And we do that every year. And there were some people there that were 100 years ago. You know, so a lot of history there.
Well, when you mentioned the payout now, compared to then, $500 in turn of the century, early 20th would be a lot of cash.
Yes, and you know, a lot of hardships.
And not easily made.
No. Quite often, too, families, will relatives, everybody will sort of contribute just to get that one person. And there was a lot of economic hardship in China at that time. So it was the goal to come to the Gold Mountain, of course. Everybody calls it Gold Mountain, you know, where money is just swept up off the streets. Yeah. So $500 was a tremendous amount. So that really placed a lot of hardship. So the wives and, you know, husbands were separated.
You know, I remember one story when you mentioned that about a man coming over here, and it was years in the making. And he was sending money, he was saving money, but he was also sending money back so that they could have a better standard of living in China.
Yeah, and you know, my grandmother, both sets of grandparents, well, one set was in Hong Kong, one was in China, and then my mom, and she, you know, needed that money to survive. She also farmed, maintain the farm by herself, you know, growing rice. And during the famine, it was really a hardship. Mm-hmm. And my dad was not able to be there to help. But, you know, whatever he was able to send back, you know, really contributed. And eventually, you know, we were able to come to Canada.
Yeah. Let's talk about the monument. I have the benefit of having this replica sitting in the studio with us, and unfortunately, I don't think we're able to show it on camera for our television viewers. But it is—it looks like a large Chinese coin mounted on a suitable mount.
Right. Well, it's going to be a bronze coin, and the coin is a representative of the currency that was used in the 1800s in China. And it's made of bronze, and actually, it's been commissioned to Peter Sawatsky. Well-known
sculptor.
It's
got a few pieces around the city.
Oh, for sure. You know, I mean, what better person to do it than somebody from, you know, well-known, and it's from Manitoba. And it's going to be 5 feet in diameter.
Ooh.
And what will be depicted will be all the different kinds of occupation that were, you know, employed. The immigrants that came, from railroad workers to laundry to restaurant, whatever that they were able to do. And then it will sit on a slab of black marble, and it's from Manitoba, and that depicts the black day in Canadian history, you know, with all the exclusion and discrimination against the Chinese. And then also it will sit on a slab of granite from Manitoba. Now that's going to represent the foundation, you know, that the Chinese immigrants and the Chinese people, our ancestors, have established in Manitoba, in Canada. So everything is very symbolic. Very symbolic. And it's going to be sitting in the Brandon Municipal Cemetery. The land has been donated by the city of Brandon.
Okay, I was going to ask you that.
Yes, and it will be west of the administrative building, facing east, of course, towards China. So, and the unveiling, we thought originally was going to be 2012, but because of the project is gained so much momentum and our funds are growing, we're going to be unveiling it on June the 26th, which is a Sunday after Father's Day, the annual Chinese visitation day to the cemetery, and it will be unveiled in 2011.
Wow.
Yes. So the government has been really supportive. The Brandon City has been really supportive. Local charities like the Whitehead Foundation, mm-hmm. the Brandon Rotarians, Westman Chinese Association, private donations, most of which has come from the Chinese immigrants and their descendants.
Right.
So it's been great.
Well, it's so 5 feet in diameter, it's going to be a significant chunk of work in there.
And it's going to be very impressive. And not only is it going to be commemorative and educational, it's going to be, we hope, a piece of art, you know, for the location. So,
well, I've seen a few, and it's, you know, when you're standing in front of them, you get this. I get this feeling of, you know, you can only just imagine. I can only just imagine what some of the people must have gone through to be here and to get their families here. I've been to Pearl Harbor and the Titanic monuments and stuff like that.
All these, you know, are so historical, and, you know, people need to go and visit these and learn about history, and not only of their own history, but, you know, all the different people that are here in Canada.
So your family, weren't part of the railroad.
No,
my experience. They were part of the restaurant merchant.
Right. Yes, and you know, a lot of the people that worked in railroads. This is through Allison Marshall, who has done a tremendous amount of research.
Yes, we've had her on our show.
Yeah, and a great source, you know, for me. And she explained that most of the railroad workers actually were in BC.
Yes.
Of course, that's where most of the railroad action was. So the people that came towards Manitoba really were into the restaurant. If you look at the Yellowhead Route.
Yes.
All along the Yellowhead Route, you know, how many Chinese restaurants are you going to find? One in every town.
Yeah.
And, you know, my family was no exception. Yeah.
And, you know, and until I got talking to people like her and like you and others, I grew up not far from Carberry, Manitoba, mm-hmm. and I just took that restaurant for granted.
Yes.
It was there.
Everybody did.
It was always there.
You expect it to be there.
Yeah.
They're always open. Right?
Yeah.
Early in the morning for coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Saturday night. Saturday night, where do you go? The restaurant, the cafe. They don't call it a restaurant, but it was cafe in those
days. Yes, it was.
And the men would go to the beer parlor in those days, and the women were not allowed.
Women not allowed.
Yeah, and the kids, of course, they all congregated in the restaurant.
And there was a mystery in from my childhood. There was mystery about the people that ran that place.
Oh. And?
It was probably a... we weren't familiar with the culture.
Right.
We heard the language, the foreign language to us spoken in the restaurant.
Yes.
The thing that still amazes me is the age of the kids that were working in there.
Yes.
It was the whole family.
And it's still that way.
From 90 years down.
Yes. And it's a whole family affair. And, you know, I mean, even in Brandon with our kids, Kenny's kids all worked in a restaurant.
Yep.
My children all did, you know, from prepping vegetables, washing bean sprouts, to working in the kitchen to the front. And I think that's really important because the kids learn the work ethics.
Yeah.
They learn people skills, you know, and they learn to be part of the community.
Don't forget math.
Oh, yes. But, you know, the younger generation, they've got calculators, right?
I suppose.
I still don't trust a calculator.
Well, I remember being amazed at a young Chinese kid, probably 8, 9 years old, ripping through my change like...
Oh, yes. We don't need the calculator. We don't need the till to tell us how much you get.
There you go.
First thing we learn.
Alrighty. Well, let's take a break here and open up our phone lines. Suwan Hillman is here, and you can join us with comments and questions, or just anything along the lines that we've been talking about. If you want to ask about the monument some more, if there's some details we can maybe fill in for you. If you're listening to us today and want to share your story with us, a bit of it, I'd really appreciate that. And you can do that right now, 725-2525. Our toll-free line is 1-888-2210-880. And we'll be back in a moment. We're back. Suwan Hillman is on the show with me today, and we're talking about the Chinese monument. And did you say June of 2011?
Yes,
okay.
June 26th.
And the work will be done by then, and you'll be unveiling,
sure.
Hopefully?
Yes, for sure.
That'll
unless something,
fantastic.
You know, unforeseen happens, hopefully not. But, you know, most of our funding is already in place.
Okay.
We got quite a bit from just private donations. And then, of course, the Canadian government, $50,000, provincial government, $5,000, you know, Whitehead Foundation, all these other people, and the private donations have really accumulated up.
Any chance your husband will call us today?
I think he's up.
You think he might be listening?
Well, he'll be wondering, where are you?
I thought you were at work. I hope you left him a note. If he is listening, I'm going to be asking you a question later that he may want to help answer.
Oh, okay.
Okay? I get your curiosity going here.
Yes.
Hi, Gert, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Suwan.
Yes.
Suwan, this is Gertie.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, I'm great. How about yourself?
Not too bad. I was recalling the day that your mom and dad, or your mom and you, came to your dad's.
Oh, my goodness. I think you worked for us at that time, didn't you?
I worked for him.
Yes, and you were trying to teach me English.
The door opened, and this little girl and your mom came through the door, and you couldn't speak any English, of course.
Uh-huh.
And you were always running around, darting in behind things.
Right.
And I said one day, "You little monkey." And the first word you said in English was monkey.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if that was the first word or the second word that I learned. I think the boys taught me another word, but I won't repeat that.
But it's so nice to hear you on the radio, Suwan.
Well, it's always lovely to see you, Gertie, because it brings back a lot of memories.
A lot of memories.
Yes.
In the cafe, as we called it. Yeah, we Thank missed you. It when it was gone.
Yes. We're yeah. glad you called us today.
Thank you, Gertie. Thank Merry you. Christmas.
Take care, Suan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Voice from your past.
Oh, for sure. Gertie was working for my dad as a waitress in a restaurant at that time. And, you know, she was trying to help my mom learn English, which my mom really never learned a lot. Well, she knows the whole menu. You can ask her to cook anything, you know. But for me, it was a lot easier because being younger. But I worked in a restaurant from the time I came in 1958. And I used to have to jump up on the ice cream cooler to sell cigarettes at that time.
All right.
Yeah, but now, of course, you can.
Sue on the cigarette sales guy.
Yeah.
hello, Ina. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm finding this story very, very interesting that you and Sue Ann are having this morning on the Chinese history, and I think we need to hear so much of that. I am always, I guess, dismayed by the demands that the Aboriginal people are putting on us to demand that their culture be integrated into the school programs and life in general. But each new person to Canada has some culture that has helped in the making of Canada. And I'm so pleased that you're doing this, Sue Ann. I don't know why. You know, we really need to know more about your development. I think of my husband, who was a young Ukrainian boy that used to chum with Wes Wong and used to go into Wes Wong's cafe when they were little boys.
Yes.
And so that was a development of an appreciation of another culture, the going both ways from the Chinese to the Ukrainian.
Yes.
And I do hope that we get more of this in Canada. I'm dismayed again by the Aboriginals insisting that they must have another section in our city council, because we have all of these other races in here that are developing this great country, and we need to know their history as well.
Well, right? And I don't think we'll fault any one culture from, you know, pressing their I won't say pressing it on us, but, you know, for promoting themselves as a culture.
Well, I think we all have to make our place in the culture, but, you know, we also have to integrate. I mean,
we also
have to work together.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice to respect our own culture, but that's our own private thing. But, you know, in general, we have to work with everybody because we're so multicultural.
Yeah.
But we are Canadian.
I think also that, you know, my parents came out as homesteaders to Manitoba in the early 1890s. So that we don't always hear about the hardships that they had in Canada, neither. And this goes on and on all the way. So thank you again for bringing this forward. And
all right.
I have followed the discussions that were held with Mr. Choi earlier on and putting this memorial down there. And I think it's a wonderful thing and great.
All right. Thanks for your call today.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's welcome to come at the unveiling.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's open to the public. We hope everybody will come and have a look at it and continue to visit it if you can't make it on that specific day. But, you know, it's there. The history is there. And we hope to have a lot of information on a plaque on it. So, you know, please do come and help us celebrate.
When I was talking to Inky on this show and asked him about, you know, things like discrimination and that, and he said he thought in their case it was because they were in a small town.
Exactly, yes. When you're the only Chinese family there, and you are obviously stand out, you know, because nobody else looks the same as you. You know, we were pretty lucky. My dad came when he was very young, so he really integrated into the community well. He made a lot of good friends.
Yeah.
So as a result, when my mom and I came, you know, his friendship base was already there.
He broke the ground, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, the children of his friends came and took me around, maybe sometimes for, you know, things that I shouldn't be learning. But on the whole, you know, I didn't face a lot. Of course, there were. You know, kids will be kids.
Yeah.
And some adults will be some adults. But in general, you know, we were very lucky because my dad fitted in the community very well.
The caller I was hoping would join us is poised and ready, I think. So I'm going to ask you my question.
Okay.
Are you a different person? How are you a different person, if you are, based on the experience of your ancestors?
Well, I think first and foremost, I'm Canadian, more so than maybe I'm Chinese, because I probably know more about the Canadian history. But knowing what's happened in the past and knowing a lot of different things now, I appreciate what I have here.
Yeah. Is there a feeling of gratitude?
Definitely.
To your parents and grandparents?
Definitely. For my grandfather, for setting the foot on, you know, on Canadian soil first. For my father, for giving up all the years. For my mother, you know, and then, you know, just for the Canadian the country for allowing us whatever way that we were able to come, in spite of the restrictions, we're here.
Yeah.
We were able to, you know, develop and establish ourselves. We were given opportunities to be whatever we want to be in Canada. I mean, what more can you ask for?
All right. Let's take a call here, shall we?
Oh, dear.
Hello, Bill.
Hello, Bill.
How
good
are you?
Good morning, hon.
Sometimes there's just too many bills. Is it true that you guys sometimes pass each other on the way in and out of bed?
Well, that is. I work till three most mornings, I think, and Suwan's up at 5.
And this is unusual time for you to be up, isn't it, hon?
Yeah, well, I usually get up half an hour later than
yeah.
this, but
you're from Newfoundland, you get up half an hour later.
Work. She works at the university. She teaches there.
How do you think she's a different person based on her ancestral history, or if you do?
Well, she has a rich tradition, you know, and certainly I'm fascinated by that whole story, and I'm certainly fascinated by the whole Chinese tradition, and it goes back over 5,000 years, and we're so caught up in our Western history here
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we go back a couple thousand years, and that's it, but we just turn our backs on what was happening on the other side of the world. These tremendous cultures.
Well, he probably knows more about the Chinese culture than I do, honestly.
In order to get Suwan on the program today, I had to promise not to talk about how this young Chinese girl turned the head of a young innocent boy from Canada. From was it Strathclair?
Strathclair, and she was from Newdale.
Yes.
My father had a business in Newdale at the time we met.
And remember, Bill was already a TV star
yes.
at that time, so that probably turned my head just as much as the, you know, his good looks.
It was him that turned your head then, is
oh,
that what
I
you're
think
saying?
So, yeah. Okay. I think I used to...
I think it was pretty much mutual, really.
Okay.
Well, I remember when he was painting his father's hardware store at that time, and, you know, I knew he was home for the summer. In fact, he went to school with my brother, so I used to just pretend that I had to go down to the local store to buy things, you know, and I'd be walking by, and this fellow would be up on the scaffolds painting. And I'm surprised that he never fell off.
Any raised eyebrows about the interracial marriage?
Oh.
I guess in a lot of ways.
Was
yes.
there?
Yes.
Yeah. In our hometowns, later on, it was certainly a plus, I think, for it in the music business.
Yeah.
Like a Chinese girl drummer was very rare.
There you go.
Well, and remember, this was 1966 when we got married.
Yeah.
We had been going together. Kenny, don't listen now. We were going together for 4 years before that without my parents knowing.
Uh-oh.
And actually, you know, it was quite a shock for my parents. You know, father, of course, is very
traditional.
Kenny and Rebecca were, you know, pretty good. They supported us.
So they were your kind of ally in the whole thing?
Later on when they did find out, yes. And there's a whole story, you know, linked to that. And our kids are just starting to hear little bits of it. I don't want to tell them too much, you know. But anyway.
Well, save it for the milestone anniversary.
Okay.
Yeah. Bill, thanks for calling us. Anything you want to add?
No, you guys are doing a great job.
Well, we're having some fun here.
Since you started, I've had about 3 business calls. So I've been in and out and up
well,
and down.
Well, get back to your work there, boy.
Okay.
See you when I get home.
Okay, love.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Did he just call me love, or was that you?
Oh, I think it was meant for me, but it could be for you. I don't
Let's
know.
Let's take a break here, and some folks have been waiting on the phone lines. We will get to your calls. Please stay with us. We wanted to get Bill on the line here, and we've done that. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Jim, thank you for being so patient. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Suwan.
Good morning.
Good morning. I know your brother fairly well from working where he worked in the lab and that, but yes. I want to share a very coincidental story with you. There's a group of us have started up a table tennis, not a league, but just a group of us, and there's a recent immigrant from China has come to Brandon, and he works at one of the restaurants in Brandon, and he's very good at ping pong, but he doesn't speak English. So about 3 weeks ago, we got Ken to come down and translate with the forum, and so we could learn more about him and whatnot. And as they were talking to each other, they realized they were both from the same village
mm-hmm.
In China of 300 people.
Wow.
Yes. And then they carried off the conversation and you were forgotten, right?
Well, pretty well, but this fellow that was the ping pong player, the Chinese cook, he was the mayor. And Kenny said that they'd just been over there, I think it was last year or the year before, and they were conversation about whether how they didn't meet each other and that. So I thought that was very a very coincidental thing that we'd get your brother down to translate, and they find out that they were from the same village.
Add another chapter in the It's a Small World book.
For sure.
Yes, very right. Yeah. Enjoying your program. Thank
well, I'm
you
glad
much.
You hung on. That's an interesting story. Thanks for that. Hi, Carol. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
I was just wondering if, Suan, if you and Bill were still doing any entertaining.
Yes. You know, once it's in your blood, it never leaves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially this last summer because it's homecoming Manitoba.
Okay.
So we played so many, I think just about every community in Manitoba and elsewhere. And so it was great because we went and played for the dances. And take example was McCreary. I mean, we played that area for so many years. And 800 people were there. And these are people that listen to our music, you know, for the last 5 decades, and people that we grew up with. So it was great because they knew all our songs. We haven't changed a bit. We still look the same.
Yes, of course.
But it was great fun. And, you know, we do do some music. We don't do it as often as we used to.
No.
But it's still great to be able to get out and do the music and build jams with a bunch of buddies every Thursday night out of Ken Daniels' Cantina. And it's a flax bale building, and he really enjoys that. So,
do you remember the time you were setting up in either the Royal Oak or the Victorian, and you were tuning your electronic keyboard, and I was checking the mic out, and you had a note you were holding and tuning, and I
did you sing?
Synced with it, but slightly off key. And you kept looking around.
And what's going on?
Yeah, to figure out what was wrong with your keyboard.
Yeah. So you and I go back a long ways, you know, musically too.
You must have played in Winnipeg a few times.
Yes.
Okay, because I remember I did have some of your LPs and that. But when I moved,
my favorite is when you're wearing the high boots.
Oh, yeah, my go-go
boots.
Oh, for sure. I don't think I can wear those anymore. But we had great times, though, didn't we, Carol?
Yeah,
they were a lot of fun.
And I really find your story very interesting now. I didn't know this, and I was wondering, what was your childhood like when you were away from your parents, living in a different area?
Can we get her to answer that when we come back?
Sure.
We're up against a break here. Thanks for the call, Carol.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye. We'll take a quick break and be right back. We're back, and Suan, this is one of those programs that I could do another hour on, but Carol wants to know what it was like. You were away from your mom, living with your grandmother?
Yes,
with
my...
From 2 till 6?
Till about 6, I think. I was living with my maternal grandparents in Hong Kong. Mom had given me to a lady, a neighbor.
Now, let me stop you, because she tried to get away.
Yes.
And was actually did some prison time.
Yes. Well, before she's... after she sent me away, actually, it was very difficult to get out of communist China because we were landowners. So there was a lot of persecution, and my mom told me that she used to carry me on her back and go to these meetings where they would be, you know, pushed around, and with my grandmother as well, my paternal grandmother. So my mom eventually had to send me away with a neighbor, and I was 2 years old. I was sent to Hong Kong and lived with my paternal grandparents. And, you know, and as we had talked about before, children that lose their parents at an early age really have no memory. And
you lost your mom.
I did. And, you know, it was about 4 years later that my mom was eventually able to leave China. She was in prison for a little while where we didn't really know where she was.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually she was able to join me. And mom said, you know, she cries still when she told me that, you know, it took a long time before I would call her mom.
Yeah.
And she was here in time to take me to kindergarten.
Mom would be what?
Oh.
No, I mean, what would you call her?
Mama.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, it was always my grandma and grandpa that looked after me. And Kenny was in Hong Kong at that time, too.
Okay.
But and again, I have no real memories of that. And then eventually we moved in with my paternal grandparents when they were in Hong Kong. And then in 1958, my mom and I came to Canada.
Yeah.
And then there was this man in my life whom I've never seen
before. Never seen before at all.
Never seen before. Other than, you know, I had no male models other than my two grandfathers. And so this man, all of a sudden, is in my life. And I really kind of resented him at first. You know, it took me away from my friends, took me away from my grandparents, took me away from my mom, really, again.
Was there a cultural thing clash between your mom and your dad?
No.
So your dad, I mean, I was thinking there might be, he might have assimilated to the point where...
No, he was still very Chinese, okay. And it really came through when Bill and I got married.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yes.
There's that story again.
Yes, another story.
So not a lot of memories of the four years? Or?
No. Yeah. Just looking at pictures, you know, and what Kenny tells me that he remembers. I remember, you know, going with my mom later on to visit relatives and that. But again, you know, my mom just said it took forever.
What happened to the land?
The communists took over everything. We eventually got our house back, okay. And that was built in when my sister was born, over 70 years ago, and still there.
All right.
The land has been converted to, you know, covered with other building,
yes.
And basically we lost everything, but we did get the house back.
Yeah.
And then now, of course, the government, Canadian government has, you know, paid us as well.
Chinese government hasn't done the same.
No.
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 Got to apologize to an earlier caller. We were just—I was just going to go to your call, and we've lost you. You're off the radar here. So, go ahead. You're on feedback.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
I was just going to mention to Suzanne that her and Bill played for our daughter's wedding dance in 1983.
Oh my goodness.
In Reston.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And my husband wanted them to play longer, so he offered Bill an extra drink if he'd play a little bit longer.
That sounds like a Ukrainian wedding. They always want to give us extra drinks.
It was very enjoyable.
Well, thank you.
It's nice to hear you.
Did he play longer or not?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
Because with those groups, you know, it usually took some cash.
Yeah, well, it did that, too.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Glad to hear from you. Well, there's got to be all kinds of people out there today listening to us and having some kind of connection, because you guys, like you said, you were, Bill was on CKX.
Yes.
Were on CKX.
Yes.
I remember you playing the drums early on.
Right. Well, like I said, you know, I was one of the only probably female Chinese drummers. And not too many female drummers at that time either. I started playing in 1967, I think, a year after we were married.
Mm-hmm.
And it was either get in with the music or stay home.
I was just going to say it was a case of survival.
Yes. You know, I didn't want to be sitting out on the dance floor watching my
husband. So had you done any music up to that?
Classical. My dad used to sit there watching me do my stupid classical music practice.
On the piano?
And then Bill had to retrain me, actually, into, you know, the contemporary, the modern music. And the first song, my first performance was in Elphinstone on the 1st of July. That's not too far away from Strathclair. And one of my first songs was Leroy Van Dyke's Walk On By.
Walk On By.
And
Wait on the Corner.
Nancy Sinatra's Boots Are Made for Walking.
Yes.
And
you had Nancy's
Petula
Boots.
Clark. Oh, I did. And Petula Clark's Downtown. And since then, you know, I started playing piano, recording, and then when we lost our drummer, I started on drums.
I hope you're going to tell us that your classical training came in.
For sure.
Yeah.
Read notes, chords, and, you know, but I couldn't play really. But then I think that went down on the genes because our kids are really musical
there you go.
As well.
I've played with people who are classically trained, and I finally got one of them to explain how, you know, stage players, like a player like Bill has this ability, right?
Yes.
And then the classical player, and they have trouble meshing.
Well, technical.
And that's what she told me.
Yes.
She said, when we see a dotted note, we play a dotted note.
Whereas, you know, with Bill, he's a natural musician, so he'll listen to a song and he can interpret that and he can bring it out, you know, in his guitar, in his playing. Whereas when you are classically trained, you know, you feel that you have to play every note.
Well, you're playing someone else's composition.
Right, and you feel that you have to play it just the way it's written.
To do it justice.
And, you know, but you want to be able to interpret as well.
So let's invite everybody to the unveiling. Hopefully there won't be any glitches. June 26th.
Yes. It's a Sunday,
at the Municipal
Cemetery
mm-hmm. south of Brandon.
Yes, and it's going to be located west of the Administrative Building, and you'll be able to see it, and we would
love
everybody. Will
there be some traditional stuff?
Yes, we don't have quite the ceremony planned yet, but there will be lots. We want to have some culture in there.
Well, two years ago, you knocked everybody's socks off at the pavilion with the Winter Festival.
Unfortunately, we won't be having one this year because of Chinese New Year.
Yes.
Everybody wants to celebrate with their families or else they've gone back to China. But we had a ball. I mean, you know, Brandon is so generous in their welcome and participation.
Well, it was high time you guys put in an appearance.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was
thanks
fun.
For being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Bill. It's always great talking to you.
Have a great holiday season and the best to your charming husband.
Yes, thank you. And, you know, you have a great holiday. And, of course, Chinese New Year is coming in the first part of February this year. So, Gong Hei Fa Choy early.
Thanks again. That's our show. We'll be back Monday just after 9. Bye for now.